Coming up on Tech News Today, why South by Southwest might be becoming the new CES, or an artisanal version anyway, as Google made the MP3 of web video, and Yahoo's going on a shopping spree. All that more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, March 8th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT3. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, usually with Sarah Lane. She's on vacation today, but we've got Darren Kitchen coming up after the top 10 stories of the day in the news. Finish it. Motorola Mobility will cut 1,200 jobs in the U.S., China, and India. That's about 10% of its workforce. The cell phone maker, which is owned by Google, laid off 4,000 workers last August. Google said publicly that these cuts are just a continuation of those reductions they started last summer. An internal email published by the Wall Street Journal said, "Our costs are too high. We're operating in markets where we're not competitive, and we're losing money." So there's that, too.
BlackBerry fans get excited because the new Z10 is coming to AT&T on March 22nd. That is according to two people familiar with the plan, according to Bloomberg. Quick note, that date is not official. The Z10 is also coming to Verizon at the end of March.
Troubles continue in Sim City. That's Sim, not Sin City. Thursday, Amazon halted sales of EA's new game for a few hours, then resumed sales but added a warning on its website that purchasers of Sim City have experienced issues with the game. EA has apologized to users and disabled some non-critical features like leaderboards to try to help. Additionally, Polygon reports that EA disabled the fast cheetah mode in the game as well. So it's getting desperate in there.
You're probably a digital hoarder like me and have piles and piles of dusty old music and ebooks just sitting around. Well, Apple just got a patent that would allow users to sell or even give away digital files, including movies and software. The system would allow access to those files one user at a time. Amazon received a similar patent back in January. While this idea does sound a bit strange for digital items, libraries are actually quite excited about the idea.
The U.S. Federal Trade Commission has filed complaints against 29 people accused of sending more than 180 million text messages falsely promising free gift cards. Eight separate complaints describe how the accused promised free gifts or prizes like $1,000 gift cards. Anyone who clicked had to traverse through several websites, sign up for subscription services or credit cards, and their information was then sold to third parties without proper disclosure. This process is also known as the 1999.com business model.
Talking to Bloomberg, computer science grad student Jeffrey Knockle discussed figuring out the way Skype works in China. Knockle collected thousands of terms that causes Skype messages to be intercepted in China. He's also curious about Microsoft's position on the matter, considering Microsoft advocates privacy rights and is the owner of Skype.
Google has reached an agreement with patent license pool MPEG-LA to provide the VP8 video codec for use without a payment of a royalty forever. VP8 is part of Google's WebM video standard. Google obtained the codec in 2010 with the intention of making it an open source replacement for H.264. MPEG-LA, the pool of companies who own patents covering the operation of H.264, immediately said its members had patents violated by VP8 back in 2011. They've been quiet since. The agreement announced today is commercial in nature, but the terms were not revealed.
According to Foss Patents, the Munich 1 regional court says that it is likely to hold Google and Motorola liable for infringing on a Microsoft patent. Microsoft could be able to obtain an injunction that would grind Google Maps service to a standstill. Google Maps on web browsers, apps, and the service as a whole would not be available from computers using a German IP address. An official decision by the court is expected in 2 months.
Thursday, the Georgia House defeated a bill that would have limited local government's ability to create their own broadband networks. Telecom companies have lobbied hard to forbid governments from creating competing networks. At a time when the United States continues to fall in internet access and speed, 19 states have some sort of limit on publicly funded internet infrastructure. Telecoms object to public subsidies for network rollouts, unless the subsidies are paid to the telecoms. Telecoms prefer the internet rollout as it began, by having private wait, it was DARPA that rolled out the internet. That was, never mind.
After 10 years, Joseph Kennedy is leaving Pandora as its CEO. He says the time is right to leave, but didn't mention why he's leaving. Kennedy will stay on as CEO until the board finds a replacement. Anybody want the job? Tom, do you want the job?
I don't want the job. No.
Keep searching then.
It's not a thankless job. People thank you. And then they charged the crap out of you when you're in Pandora. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one solution to not only having a website with mobile responsive design so that your images are automatically made to look beautiful on different platforms. Your beautiful design that's designed by Squarespace, you get to take credit for it, but they designed it. That looks great on all different platforms, whether somebody's got a small phone or a big tablet or a huge monitor on their desktop. And now they have Squarespace Commerce, a powerful and flexible e-commerce solution integrated to work with every Squarespace template. All those beautiful templates, you can still use them and run a store as well. You can sell digital goods like MP3s and ebooks. You can sell physical goods like hardcover books and CDs. And it's fast. You can set up your account so you can accept payments right away, credit or debit cards. One interface for managing your orders, tracking your orders, providing customer email updates, even printing things like shipping labels and coupons. Squarespace Commerce is included with the new business plan subscription. That starts at $24 a month when you sign up for a year, or $30 a month on the monthly plan. And of course, you still get all of that good social media integration, that reliability, that good design. So go try it for now. Free. I mean, I'm going to let you try it for absolutely free. Actually, Squarespace always does that. They don't even ask you for a credit card. Just try it out. Start building your website. If you decide to purchase it, use the offer code TNT3 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. Don't forget, if you buy an annual plan, you get free domain registrations and you get 10% off the whole annual fee. So squarespace.com, use that offer code TNT3. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Please thank them for their support of Tech News Today by going and trying out the site. See if you like it. All right, Darren Kitchen joining us today. You're on the road all the time these days, man. Where are you at now?
No, I know. It's been a little crazy lately in Berlin and Amsterdam, but now I am in this magical land that they call Anaheim.
You should have just come over.
I know. I was actually thinking about it. I could have a car, so
I could put you upstairs. Oh well, too late. Let's start. Neither one of us, none of us actually, are in Austin, Texas, for South by Southwest. Even though Sarah's not here, that's not where she's going either. But there are still 27,000 people descending on Austin for South by Southwest Interactive right now. Kicks off today. Lauren Good points out that the usual app watch is probably a misnomer. There doesn't seem to be like a big app that's going to come out at South by Southwest this year. And really, it's only Foursquare that launched itself at South by Southwest. They got the code together just in time for South by Southwest. Everybody thinks Twitter launched there. It didn't. It just got popularized there. It had launched a year before. Jenna Werthmann over at the New York Times has an article, though, that there's a lot of hardware. She calls it artisanal hardware because it's from companies like Nest and Ouya and Litro and Leap Motion. Although big companies like Samsung are there giving away pizza and cab rides and getting the cast of Arrested Development on stage. So there's cool stuff going on. Just wanted to throw it out there. I mean, are you sad that you're not in Austin involved in this? What is South by Southwest for anymore, anyway?
I have no idea. I keep getting the mailers about it, and there are all these parties, and there seems to be a lot of nice meals going on, and free cab rides, I think, by one company. I can't remember which
Samsung.
One. Is it Samsung? I thought it was Swift or
said.
Lyft or somebody
Uber,
else.
Uber cab rides from Samsung.
Oh, it was Uber, but it's with Uber. Okay, that was the email I got for it. I mean, I could see it. What it attracts is a bunch of people who have influence, right? So if you have a product like Leap or Ouya being demonstrated there, I think you have the ability to get a message out in a different way. CES used to be the dominant show when it came to hardware, but there'd be so much news that it kind of – any giant story would bury any little story. And so it looks like maybe South by Southwest is becoming this place for smaller goods that probably get lost in the shuffle in a giant event like CES.
I kind of like this version of South by Southwest a little better than the sort of social marketing conference that it has become in the last few years. Darren, what do you think?
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I think that, you know, we've seen some really interesting things happen in the last few years, especially I think much of it attributed to, well, predominantly like the forward facing stuff would be like Kickstarter projects. But I think behind the scenes, one of the reasons is because, you know, 3D printers have become so accessible. Microcontrollers are so cheap. There's dev platforms, and there's so much interest among the hacking community. And I say hackers, I mean, like, you know, these coders that would otherwise be doing apps of making cool hardware. And I think that that's really a place where we're going to see a whole lot of innovation in small companies. And, you know, it was
like takes your breath away.
Phenomenally.
Yeah. No, I think this trend, and whether we want to call it artisanal hardware, which I sort of do and I sort of hate at the same time, I think it's a cool thing, and it's definitely an uprising thing, whether it's at South by Southwest or not. We are going to see more companies going direct to people saying, we want to make this. Do you want to back it? And we're going to see more innovation that way. It's sort of, maybe this, we've been waiting, like, what's the next thing after Web 2.0? I guess it's apps. Maybe this is the next thing after that. Meanwhile, web video may have gotten a big boost. One of the problems with web video I ran in yesterday, I was making a video for a Kickstarter. I made it. I output an M4V. Gave it to my friend Len. He's like, Kickstarter won't take this. Can you redo it as an MOV? Oh, fine. What's the difference? Same video. It's easy to... Maybe those concerns will go away eventually. Google has got a step toward that. The 11 patent holders of MPEG LA, which hold the patents. It's a group of companies that hold the patents on H.264, have agreed to give Google royalty-free license. Why? Google may be paying something for it, but Google will be able to put VP8 out as a royalty-free video license that is open source. Now, you may have heard it called WebM. VP8 is the video codec part of WebM. It may be too late to dislodge H.264. Even Firefox has given in on H.264, but we could see it moving into newer things like WebRTC. And Google has been championing it. Google Play is now available with WebM. YouTube has WebM encrypted to an HTML5 player now in certain ways that you access. And Google's WebM product manager, John Luther, said that VP9, which is the next version of VP8, is starting to come together with huge improvements. So Ayaz, I mean, does this give you any hope for a unified future, an easier future where video could work like audio, where you don't have to worry so much about the format of the file?
Absolutely not. Nope. No hope there. There are so many different video formats out there. Even when you should have something that should play on everything, or if it's just a wrapper over a codec, it seems like there's always some kind of weird fight going on between these major companies about supporting what kind of video. So the thing is, if we're talking about just moving video between you or I mean, a lot of us are willing to go through the workarounds that are necessary to get that to work. As for universal, like actually having a standard that people will use, I mean, I really think that's about whatever company finds that to be best suited to them. H.264 took off a lot because that was on a lot of devices. And the thing is, it compresses video very well. And it's been sitting around for a while as a standard. And there is an H.265 standard being worked on now to be a better compression to have higher quality video and smaller rates, smaller files. So if Google can back it enough, and if their devices use this thing and all their properties use it, maybe. But I don't think it'll be a standard like industry-wide by any means.
I think it could be. I think all your concerns are correct, and that it's not a lock. It's not like Google puts it out tomorrow and suddenly everybody just drops H.264. H.264 is too embedded. I think probably VP9 has the better chance. VP8 back in 2010 got a lot of people excited, but nobody was willing to put it into their software because of the royalty and the patent issues that MPEG LA put out there. Maybe MPEG LA agreed to this because they feel like WebM's not a threat anymore and they're not worried about it dislodging H.264. It would take years, though. I mean, it took H.264 this long to get there. And don't get me wrong, the problems we have with video codecs and video formats and containers are not as simple as the issues we have with audio. So even if WebM did take off, it's no lock to say that all of those issues go away either. There could be lots of issues with using WebM that cause incompatibilities and those same frustrations I'm talking about. Darren, what do you think? You're like us. You're putting video on the internet all the time. You know how hard this is. WebM give you any hope?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I'm not losing hope because think about this. At one point in time, RealPlayer was a standard. We can only hope that VPA will get wider adoption, most of all because, it's an open standard for innovation. To mind you, there's still open stuff right now, like Ogg Theora's very cool open codec, but it doesn't have the kind of muscle behind it like Google. And while there's this whole, the MPEG LA in 2010, they made H.264 free for end users use on the internet, but it's still not a free codec to use. It's still encumbered by patents. I feel like it's only with a truly free and open codec that you can actually see some really cool innovation. I can't even, not surprisingly, H.264 comes from both MPEG and ITUT.
Yeah, and WebRTC through an HTML5 player. HTML5 is starting to finally come together. It stopped being that buzzword, and people are actually starting to use it to good effect for the first time. And we will see more of that in the coming years. I think people get impatient. They're like, I've been hearing about HTML5 for a couple of years, and nothing's come of it. I guess it's never going to turn into anything. So these are slow wheels that have to move, and it may be a different version of WebM, a different version of HTML, well, not version, but a different implementation of HTML5. In fact, HTML5 becoming a standard would be one of the first steps, right? So we'll have to remain patient, but I think there definitely is. Personally, I think there definitely is hope that this could loosen things up and make things a lot easier to publish on the internet. Meanwhile, Yahoo wants to go on a shopping spree. Is that what I'm hearing?
That is correct. Kara Swisher has a report on Yahoo saying that Yahoo is looking to pick up some new companies. Now, its HR head, Jackie Reese, mentioned that Yahoo was working on two significant acquisitions and about six smaller talent acquihires. Sources said that Yahoo has been looking at a range of such acquisitions, looking at advertising technologies, mobile monetization, and, of course, the consumer space. Now, Swisher has her own ideas for acquisitions for Yahoo. Her number one pick, she thinks that Yahoo should pick up Pinterest. Other ideas included Tumblr, Foursquare, picking up something as big as Hulu, Quora, or Flipboard. Right now, Marissa Meyer has been in charge for a while. We've seen some small changes to the Yahoo webpage, the homepage, and the email refresh. It's slight, refreshing to the whole products. Tom, do you think Yahoo needs to buy a big name property, or should they just be trying to figure out their own path?
Yeah, I'm tempted to say things that are very buzzwordy, like they shouldn't buy a big name property. They should buy the right size property or the right. And all I'm saying there is what Yahoo needs to do if they acquire anything is acquire something that actually fits into Yahoo's strategy. I think Marissa Meyer has a good idea of what she thinks Yahoo's strategy is. I see hints of it in what they've done so far, but I couldn't possibly tell them what they should buy. Should they buy Hulu? Yahoo has a video presence of a sort, and I guess that would fit into this idea that Marissa Meyer has said in the past of Yahoo being the place where you find everything. I guess I could see Quora and Flipboard fitting into that as well. I don't know what makes sense for Yahoo because I'm not still certain what Yahoo is.
They got rid of that tagline of being the premier digital company. They're a technology company. I'm pretty sure that's what Marissa Meyer has said in the recent past. Darren, what do you think? Do you think there's a perfect company out there? Should Yahoo be looking at Pandora? I mean, they're having a bunch of trouble.
I don't know. It's the American way. If you're feeling down, go shopping. I'd love to see Yahoo just build something internally radically different that we didn't even know we need, even if it's a flop. I'd just like to see, or even if they just invest in startups. But if they're thinking, hey, we need to just go high with any of the companies we've mentioned, as they've done with Flickr. That's how I feel about it.
I guess they could go the route of AOL. AOL has made a huge bounce back by buying Engadget, buying Huffington Post, buying TechCrunch, and putting together a new vision for what they do. And it's working. It's working for them. I'm not sure what that vision is for Yahoo, but outside of that, I don't need to know what it is. If they were to go and say, hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to buy Hulu and Tumblr and Pinterest, and here's how it all fits together to make a better Yahoo. I suppose it could work. It's not a bad idea.
You know, when I was looking at these options, or at least this list of potential companies to be acquired, I think Hulu might be the best way to go because Google has YouTube. They have this great video arm, and they're figuring out how exactly to use advertising to work with these videos. If Yahoo can take its search business and marry it into Hulu, and people are actually kind of used to using Hulu in an interactive way. You have the ad tailors. You have a lot of data you're putting in. It's got some Facebook connections. I think a significant Yahoo video arm might be an intelligent way to go, and they could keep it branded as Hulu. But the thing is, they're running into a lot of deals with, I mean, there would be all these content deals they would have to line up. It would be a significant move for Marissa Mayer to be like, our Yahoo is different. We're going to do something big. But it would be a really bold move for something like that to happen.
Yahulu, as everyone in the chat room is saying right now. Perfect, right? The mashup is already
That's how you decide, right? Like, when it was GooTube?
Yeah,
makes sense.
That's the decision-making factor.
GooTube.
Right.
Exactly. CanSec West Security Conference wrapping up in Vancouver, British Columbia today. Go Lions. And there was a special test this year. It was the Ponium 3 test. I say Ponium so that those on audio know that I mean spelling it P-W-N. Chrome OS was put up, and Google offered $3.14159 million in prize money for those who could hack it. I'll leave it to you to figure out why they picked that particular number. $110,000 for a browser or system-level compromising guest mode or as a logged-in user delivered via web page. $150,000 for compromising with device persistence, guest-to-guest with interim reboot delivered by a web page. Nobody cracked Chrome OS. They were using the Wi-Fi model of the Samsung Series 500 Chromebook, Samsung Series S 500 Chromebook, I think. I think that's a mistype. Running the latest stable version of Chrome. Now, they did have some partial attacks that they are verifying, and they may pay out on those. But they had given 10 bug fixes for Chrome OS right before the competition, so they may have stacked the deck a little bit. Also, the classic pwn to own still going on. It'll wrap up today. All the browsers except Safari have proved vulnerable to attacks in pwn to own. That's pretty usual. And the only reason that Safari has not fallen is nobody decided to attack it this year. So, Darren, if nobody decides to attack Safari, does that mean it's so secure nobody is willing to take the challenge? Or is it like, nobody uses Safari, why bother?
Yes, it's like versus for Linux, you'll be safe. You know, and this coming from a Linux user who loves Linux, it's one of the things. Personally, I just love the what Chrome is doing with their OS, the TPM stuff, the sandbox model. And when you see other plugins fail, you know, all of the PDF, Adobe Reader stuff, the Flash and the Java stuff, you know, that really just makes me wonder, can the same applied to those plugins, because we've just seen like the last, you know, last month does not feel good for Java, and the same model could be applied to those. But most of all, I just love to see Google paying out for exploits. You can buy a lot of pie with that money.
You can, and enjoy
delicious
all that pie on March 14th. Does this make you feel better about Chrome OS? Does it make you feel like, hey, maybe I should check that out? It's, you know, a little more secure.
That was what I was thinking about with this. That, you know, this kind of story shows that Chrome OS is pretty secure. I mean, this is something that's important for all kinds of enterprises that are thinking, okay, what are we going to use for our base? Are we going to be giving them Windows machines, Macs? Are we going to give them maybe even Chrome OS at this point? Because there are a bunch of Chromebooks. If they could just add some features to Chrome OS that make it more viable as an actual operating system, something that people want to use regularly, Google can just stick and tout the concept of, we're secure. We've been testing this for years. Nobody can crack our operating system, and we're paying money for this. It's not like Safari where, like, oh, well, nobody wants to do that one. People are coming after Chrome OS and failing. So if this kind of thing continues, I can see Google touting this a lot, and maybe getting some inroads into maybe big business, schools, places like that.
All right, let's talk a little bit about video. Barnes & Noble is at the back of the pack as far as video, but they're certainly not out of it, and they struck some new deals.
Yeah, they got some new deals to line up some TV and movie content. They just lined up MGM, Lionsgate, Paramount, National Geographic, and a whole bunch of other studios. As for titles, if you're wondering, you'll be able to watch Mad Men, The Hunger Games, Skyfall, that's the latest James Bond movie, the Twilight movies, and a whole bunch of others. The deal brings content streaming to the Nook HD and the HD Plus tablets in the U.S., and the Nook tablets already can play ultraviolet movies as well. So it's got a bunch of video playback capabilities. Tom, it's encouraging that Barnes & Noble is lining up more content, but does the Nook tablet even stand a chance when there's all this competition out there?
Now, when you say it brings streaming content, the Nook doesn't have like a Netflix-like or Amazon Instant Prime-like streaming service, does it?
I don't believe so. I think what this would do is I don't believe you can download these videos as I've read it.
But it's not an all-you-can-eat, I pay Nook $8 a month and I get access to all the streaming content.
Not
it's an on-demand streaming thing. Because frankly, I don't see this as any real great shakes for Barnes & Noble. We see announcements like these from Netflix twice, three times a month. We see announcements like these from Amazon, whether it's for Amazon Instant or Amazon Instant Prime, sometimes a couple times a week. So, you know, the fact that Barnes & Noble finally has an announcement, it's like, well, where have you guys been? I mean, it's not a bad thing to get more content, but you are very, very far behind. And you really need to get people to either install your app that can play these, and they don't have that as far as I know, or you really need to be selling more Nooks, because otherwise this doesn't mean much.
And to clarify, I'm looking at the press release, and Barnes & Noble says, we're very excited to begin transactional distribution of our films on Nook. That sounds like you got to pay per movie. Darren, do you think there's anything that Barnes & Noble could do on the hardware side to make this tablet stand out? Because they're lining up content deals. They have ultraviolet movies. What else could they possibly do to that hardware to go, oh, yeah, this is better than everything else out there?
No, well, that's the thing. I think in the last year, we've really realized that the homogenization of the hardware, especially in the tablet space, where it's like, it's this big 8-inch or 7-inch or 10-inch thing with a screen. And I find it funny that it's actually the studios and the licensing deals that are actually making the difference here. It's more of the ecosystem. And so, yes, I would love to see some innovation in hardware. And in fact, I think that, you know, Barnes & Noble did some really cool stuff with the Nook, with the e-ink stuff. But again, that's one of those areas where it's really cool. You can innovate. You can make something that looks great and lasts forever. Has a great battery life. You're not selling more of them because you made something great that you don't need to replace.
Yeah, I think they're just stuck. I mean, you have this concept of Barnes & Noble. You think books. You don't think about movies. You're not thinking about maybe even technology. I think it was a strange brand to get into the tablet market. E-readers, I understand, because Barnes & Noble is books. That's what people think. But this idea of transitioning over to effectively an Amazon competitor because you have your own tablet, it seems like that's an incredibly hard game to get into. I'm surprised they've lined up as many deals as they have, but I'm just very curious about how long that Nook line can survive without some kind of significant acquisition or some kind of cash infusion from another company like Microsoft again.
All right, let's talk about YouTube. The channels limited beta is now available for everyone. What is YouTube One Channel?
Okay, YouTube One Channel, this was a thing that was open to only a select few. It's open today, and what it lets you do is you get to make your YouTube channel different. It's going to look different, but it's going to look consistent from mobile device to your
for
desktop.
For channel creators, right?
That's right.
For users, okay.
Actually, it's pretty much anybody who has a channel on YouTube. I was able to do this with my personal channel this morning, so I think anybody could do this.
Because but not the page that you go to watch videos, the page that you put up for people to watch your videos. That's what I'm trying to make.
Thank you for clarifying that. That's exactly right. So instead of having that normal web page where you can have a background, this is a very Google Plus kind of look when it comes to this. There's a new way to entice people to subscribe. When you go to this new version of YouTube, you'll have an auto-playing video where you can say to prospective subscribers, hey, why you should subscribe. Once they do that, that video no longer shows up. There's a new layout. You can change what playlists are up there. As a part of the redesign, there's channel art on the top of every page. A lot more control on playlists, multiple layouts. And when I was messing with this, in the video, they're showing you how it would look, how your channel would look on the desktop, television, and mobile devices. I thought the television aspect was a little bit unique. Tom, what do you think of the new look? Do you think that's going to get people to feel like YouTube's more professional? It's not just cats?
Well, that's certainly a very broad question to ask. Is this redesign going to accomplish that? No, probably not. Is it moving towards that direction? Yeah, definitely. Everything YouTube has been doing as far as paying and funding content, getting more professional content on there is moving towards that. I like this layout. Geek & Sundry has it, and they've used it for really good effect up at the very top, where they lay out the weekly channel arrangement, because they premiere different shows on different days of the week. So at a glance, with that big banner headline or that big banner graphic, I see what's on what days of the week. And that feels very much like a real channel. What to watch next is cool. I don't really want anybody to autoplay something for me when I come to their site. I just don't like that. And especially a pitch that's like, here's why you, I'm just going to try to pause you as fast as possible, and now I'm going to be annoyed with you. So I don't like that part of it. But overall, these layout improvements are great, and they make the page a lot more scannable and a lot easier to use.
Darren, I went to the Hack 5 YouTube page this morning. I noticed you didn't update it yet. I'm sure you're looking into it. What kind of tools are you excited?
They were on our case to even update like weeks ago when it was available for us before everybody else. And I still to this day can't figure out YouTube. It's weird. I love Google Plus. I can figure that out. So I'm anything that is more Google Plusification of YouTube, I'm down for that. I like the standardization across the screens. It looks more modern. And yet I just still can't figure out the back end, which is weird because I can SQL inject your database, but your social network, I'm lost.
Yeah, I didn't mean to single you out. I was messing with it myself. I know my know-how page needs to get updated as well. When I was trying to set up the new page, they do a nice guided tour. They gray out parts. They show you the new sections. It's actually really user-friendly, and it does feel a lot more like Google Plus when you're setting up your cover art or your channel art. It's just like setting up the cover art on Google Plus. Very familiar to anybody that has used that before. And they even have a thing
on
the top
right.
The new
cover art or the old cover art in Google Plus? Because that just changed like the other day.
Yeah, a few days ago.
Well, the same kind of interface when you're selecting your image. So it's that same kind of thing.
Yeah.
There also, there's this nice checklist on the right side telling you like all the things you can do to customize it. I think it's going to, I mean, I like the standardization that's going on to Google. YouTube has always been a little bit outside of Google, but this feels much more like another property. It's like Google Plus, when you go from that page over to YouTube, feels the same. I think it's going to be, It's going to make things look a lot more professional for those who want to really customize it. Because YouTube, for the longest time, this wasn't something you could really customize too much. You can put a thing in the back and you can have playlists. But this kind of system, I think, is going to make it a lot more attractive to a lot of people.
I think the thing that'll get me more excited is when they make discovery easier, right? I mean, they have the channel subscription service, but that has its own problems because you can only subscribe to everything on a channel or nothing on a channel. You can't subscribe to individual shows within a channel. It's really hard to find channels, even if you know about them, without doing a search or finding a direct link. So maybe that's the next step that I would like to see. And that's what's going to get me really excited is I can easily go to YouTube and discover new channels and find channels that I'm looking for.
Yeah, on the right rail of the
Actually,
new design.
I think I just, you know, when you were saying that, it made me realize, like, it's not even just, you know, the bad discovery there, and you're talking about finding those channels, but if you've ever tried to use the YouTube interface on, say, the Xbox and or any of these smart TVs, there's so many different variations of it, and they're all absolutely hideous. So I realize now, like, the discussion may have been internally, like, how do we get a unified vision for YouTube on these big screens? And so for that, I really enjoy it.
On the discovery side, on the right side of each of these new pages is a list of other channels we like, related channels. But yeah, Tom's got this completely right. It's very difficult to find new content because YouTube just flat out has an inventory problem. They have so many videos, so many channels, that it's really hard to find anything because your search results aren't there. Maybe if Google could figure out how to do search on video, that'd be nice.
Yeah, search. That'd be cool.
For Google? Nah.
Yeah. Nah, I don't know anything about search. By the way, I as I always do on these sorts of stories, my wife works for YouTube, but that gives me no actual inside knowledge about this, and you can decide for now whether I'm biased. Let's look at the randomizer. Google Glass apparently has an app being developed by Duke University that will allow you to identify people based on their clothing. There's a real thing called face blindness, don't laugh, where people have a hard time recognizing faces. This could be a huge deal for them if they teach it. All right, this is the stuff that Ayaz wears. This is the stuff that Jason wears. This is the stuff that Darren wears. And then it'll just tell me, like, oh, there they are. And, of course, they talk in a lot of these stories about using it to meet up with somebody. Although right now, I guess, you're the guy with Google glasses. And so as Daniel Cooper points out on Engadget, you're going to be easier for them to find you. Just look for the guy with the Google glasses.
Look for the guy with the computer strapped to his face.
Yeah.
This idea, I mean, I was not aware of the blindness to a face, but I mean, this will help. It's just a very strange application for Google Glass, I think. I mean, if you want to identify people in uniforms, it seems a little easier. You're like, okay, that's a cop or something. But I mean, to figure out what you wear and then find out, oh, wow, it figured me out in like 2 days. I wear the same clothes that often. Maybe this should be an alert. Your friend is telling you, you got to do laundry because you've been wearing the same thing for like a week.
Yeah, an alert that tells you wore that like last week.
Two shirts.
Google can also detect by aroma, I'm just saying.
Google Glass, the most interesting thing that we'll see out of Google, you know, society makes as far as like cues that are with you know, wearing, you know, a computer on your face, and how, like, you know, we've seen phones and tablets, restaurants, and the different, you know, kinds of uses that they have, and how they change society. I think that's the most interesting thing I see with Google Glass.
All right, normally at this point in the show we would go to Sarah for the calendar, but since she's not here, we'll just wait. Mm-hmm. Or I guess I can do the calendar. Maybe that's what we should do. Today is the 35th anniversary of the first airing of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The first episode aired on BBC Radio 4 Wednesday, March 8th, 1978 at 10:30 p.m. So I hope you all know where your towel is. Saturday, March 9th, that's tomorrow as we record this, is Boston Code Camp 19. It's held at Microsoft's Nerd Campus in Boston. Stands for New England Research and Development. Admission is free, though you do have to register. It's from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. with a break for lunch. They actually let you eat. Also Saturday, the NTT Docomo will begin accepting pre-orders for the LTE-enabled version of the Sony Xperia Tablet Z. And daylight saving time begins Sunday in the United States. So if you're an international user who's not changing your clock, adjust your Twit calendars accordingly. And you can always go to twit.tv/cal for our schedule. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Brian in Pittsburgh has a theory about why SimCity is as messed up as it is. Actually, he has an explanation for something he thinks maybe people misunderstand.
Hey, this is Brian from Pittsburgh calling in regarding the SimCity debacle. It's not really directly DRM. The game is running a lot of the simulation on the server side instead of the client side, so they can't just patch it out to make it run smoothly for everyone. They would have to basically send your own server to you, and that's not going to work. Thanks for the show. Bye.
Fair point, although a lot of people say it's tantamount to the same thing because you shouldn't have to connect to that server to be able to do anything. Anybody disagree?
Well, I mean, part of the game is somewhere else, I mean, that's a little bit strange. I mean, because you could probably just include that in the download, I'd imagine, but...
With a game like SimCity, one would presume that you could have designed it to be able to work without the server connection, but it's a fair point.
We got an email from VJ, one half of the boys from Boston. He says, hey guys, a buddy of mine works at Intel and has been talking the last several months about how Intel sees no real value in ARM for various reasons. In essence, the Clover Trail and successor platforms are, according to my buddy, smaller, faster, and more power efficient. Intel has been working with vendors to help them transition. Based on my friend's enthusiasm and knowledge, I'd guess that negotiations with Apple are about pushing the next big thing in mobile processing versus Intel going ARM. Or maybe my friend just drank the Kool-Aid.
You know what, though? I that makes sense from within Intel, but it makes less sense to me elsewise. And we have another email here from Thelok. He, like a lot of other people, pointed out that Intel technically already licenses ARM. We talked about, well, if Intel were to license ARM, I think what we meant to say was if Intel were to start using their license for ARM to make ARM-based processors. But He points out the fact that Intel believes that system on a chip is not the only thing, but that other good stuff around it is what makes a great system. And Medfield already meets the stringent power requirements is another deterrent for Intel to use ARM technology to build future systems on a chip. So both of these guys, Vijay and Thilak, make sense from within Intel. But then what would Apple get out of this? That's what I don't quite get.
Yeah, I mean, Intel's expanded their foundry business, so it wouldn't be too crazy that they would just say, hey, listen, we'll definitely take your money. There's nothing wrong with that. And Apple's always trying to get a package deal. Anything that gets them away from Samsung, because Samsung used to make a lot of their processors.
Hey, Apple doesn't have a foundry. I get that. Thank you, Padre SJ. But then why would Apple not design the chip? I mean, Apple has sunk a lot of money into buying PA Semi and folks to design the chip. Or would they be allowed to design an x86 or a Medfield or a Clover Trail chip? The pieces just aren't connecting for me yet. But good feedback from both you guys. Thanks for submitting. And Darren Kitchen, thank you for being with us on a Friday. Good to have you back. Tell folks what are you up to? You're all over the place these days. What's going on with Hack 5?
I'm planning a new big project, so stay tuned for some announcements here shortly. But right now I've got some awesome stuff over on Hack 5 from a pretty spiffy hackerspace in Amsterdam, all about setting up virtual private networks, and then Shannon's reporting from rsa.org for all of that good stuff.
Excellent. Check it out, hak5.org. You can also check out our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, and have a voice in what stories we cover each and every day on Tech News Today. Don't forget our best of submissions at any point during any time of the year on any Twitch show. If you find something you're like, hey, that was really funny, I want to see that in the best of show at the end of the year. I know it's March, but it's never too early to go to twit.tv/best of and submit something. That's it for us. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv. Give us a call. Leave us a great voicemail like we had today at 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back Monday with all new news and Andy Inokko. See you then.